Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Wednesday stream.
Hello.
Hello,
We're back.
we're back. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Evelyn. If you've just dropped out of the sky and ended up here through some like quantum tunneling of some kind, I don't know. We do get new viewers. I guess they just kind of absorb who we are via osmosis.
This and also, I presume most people don't interact with our stuff without, on some level, knowing who we are, either directly or via other stuff, anyway.
That's true,
I mean, like,
yes.
let's put it this way, there's questions that I would get in the chat if people did not know.
This is also there's questions you do get in the chat sometimes. And in the comments on community posts. But that's kind of by the by. I should have put that on the thumbnail, shouldn't I? Anyway, there we go. I'm quite proud of that thumbnail. It is quite aesthetic, but I must confess. Sorry.
Don't tell them.
I actually must confess it took quite a lot of finagling to get that right, actually. I added the stars in the background and I edited it, and I don't know. It's technically an AI image, the middle one. The exploding Earth. But I believe it's basically copied from something else,
All
as
right.
AI can only do. Is
It's
it
probably like a screen cap of one of those oh God, what was it called? Like the weird solar system simulator thing you used to be able to buy on Steam. Like a screenshot from that or something.
2 million years in MS Paint, yes, basically.
10,000 hours.
No, it's I don't know. I despair at the quality of most YouTube thumbnails, so I try and make ours at least kind of visually striking and at least somewhat relevant.
Yes.
I couldn't think of anything else to make for this one that wouldn't be terribly kitsch, so I just kind of went for the whole exploding planet thing.
Hack the climate.
Hack the climate! Hack the climate! But welcome, yes. As always, thank you to all our returning viewers and especially all our returning members. We are still monetized somehow. So you can support us if you wish via the normal YouTube-y method, super chats. We also have memberships available, which is a way quite a few, I think over 20 people. I think we've got 22 members now, which is quite a lot.
Oh, it's an exclusive club.
It is. But we do have people who do support us on a recurring basis, and thank you to those people. If you don't want to pay the Google tax, we do have a PayPal link. It's the best one for now. I'm still trying to find a better way to get message up on screen and all sorts, but it's
Either I think we don't really have too much anyway, so the message on screen stuff starts to become like so clunky.
I know, but I'd like to do at some point a proper community stream again and things like that.
But you know what happens every time we do a community stream?
Nobody shows up,
No.
and then we get no questions. It's really awkward. People just want to be fed black pills, it seems, by the black pill dinner lady.
Get your tray out.
Get your tray out. I'm not wheeling that out yet. I'm going to wheel that out for a special occasion.
Slop time.
Yeah, I'm gonna. There is a high effort black pill dinner lady meme that has been already made. So we'll wheel that out at some point. The proper meme. But for now, we'll just
Yes,
stick with the nickname you were
if you're
given.
not gonna support us in some sort of financially tangible sense, then please do at least interact with the stream and share it around and make sure to do like the algorithm summoning comments, which I see every time and they always make me giggle.
They are
So,
quite funny. You guys are quite, oh, great algorithms.
ooh.
We do also have the Substack, which is something new will be coming out for tomorrow. So
Ooh.
that's good. We actually have more written content coming. I finally finished something.
I should also have something approaching what was going to be the rough layout from my, or what would have been my speech, Nomos ex Mises. And I'll be proposing the idea, which I think I mentioned to a few people, of the Carlyle Institute, and we will see how that goes. I know I just kicked that, but my legs don't fit under the table. Buy a bigger table.
This is already a rather large desk, actually, for commercial purposes. I mean, for a con sorry, for a kind of consumer purposes.
Not lonk friendly.
Not monk friendly. No, it is not. But there is a rather large desk here.
But anyway,
Anyway,
let's
yes,
get to the black pills.
we should get to the pills. Yes, the blackest of the pills. No, this is going to be a follow on, obviously, from our stream on Monday, about the unworkability of net zero. Also, this stream is not a bait and switch, but it isn't going to be directly about what a lot of people think it's going to be about. I'm not just going to be talking about kind of the idea of war with China as an inevitable outcome of China's polluting too much. That is something that's been talked about before, but I don't believe it is something that's going to happen. We'll discuss that in more detail as we go forward, but that is not the kind of major theme of the stream. In fact, I'd like to make this about the banality, really, yes, overall, of how what is effectively a climate war is being waged on the individual. Because a lot of it seems very boilerplate, very granular, and very much what you'd expect, but it ends up in the places we're in. It ends up with, you know, cars being banned and things like that. Well, so it's
also a classic example of the sort of research we do either into organizations or individuals that demonstrate that a lot of this is just the civil service running as it has for years at this point.
Yes.
And that some of these projects have been the work for a very, very long time. And now that we've really started to pick apart at them, we can start to spot the very direct links between some of them. Because anyone that, I think, to get part of what we're going to be discussing this evening, really should have caught up with the previous streams from Monday and some of the ones from last week, because there will be a connection to UBI here, because, of course, we're talking about climate change stuff. And if you are the technocrat managerialist who wants to contend with climate change as an issue, UBI is one of your solutions. But I think we'll get more into that as we go.
Well, I started to notice something, as I tend to do, as we tend to do.
You noticed?
We did a little bit of noticing. To the point that I'm going to put a slight glow watch on this.
It's just a touch.
Just a smidge.
It's more of like an underglow.
It's more of an NGO watch, to be fair. But when we were looking at a lot of the UBI stuff, a lot of the 4-day work week stuff, the demobilization, kind of the death of the workplace. In fact, some of the people involved call themselves post-work activists, which is kind of funny. But a certain name kept coming up, and a certain organization kept coming up, which was an organization that is called, oh dear, I seem to have...
Autonomy.
Autonomy, yes.
You've mixed your tabs up.
I've mixed...
You've got more than one up.
Yeah, I've got more. Okay, I just don't want to close our notes down here.
That's okay.
But when we talked about the Universal Basic Income Plan stuff, this came out after. This came out 2 days ago, and it's another UBI pilot for England. It's a trial of £1,600 a month towards universal basic income with a certain, you know, group of people in England. They're not quite sure. John from Central Jarrow in northeast England, East Finchley in North London.
Yeah, Autonomy. This is the NGO that's behind.
It's a think
this.
Tank.
Yes,
it's a left wing think tank. Known as Autonomy, said it hopes to propose a pilot that will make the case for the national basic income and more comprehensive trials to fully understand the potential for basic
income. Oh, there we go. Okay. A national basic income. That's a new one. It used to be universal basic income. Now it's national basic income. We're getting closer and closer, aren't we?
We are getting closer, but I started to... again, this is the report, and they very much boast about all the coverage it's got. Coverage in The Guardian, coverage in The Independent, and of course, coverage in the BBC.
This is exactly like the UBI lab report that got touted in the Rishi Sunak article.
Yes.
They'd be looked at as part of the political sort of switcheroo, as we called it, which seems to be unfolding ever so much more in front of us.
All of it comes from the same place. This is also linked in with the... Involving London and Basic Income Pilot, which is another part of this, which is run by London City Hall via the Green Party. So this is just a pilot from, like, the London City government, effectively, that they are linked in with here. But again, that's kind of by the by. But once again, we see them here. Cornwall, Universal Basic Income, suggested back in July to reduce poverty.
The scheme and a report by independent think tank Autonomy suggest an income of at least £40 a week per child and £60 a week for adults. This would, of course, be meant in a number of ways, including a tax on high earners and a reform of national insurance.
So it's a universal basic income, a universal national income, and you'll see, sorry, I close it a bit soon there, but their actual vertical here mentions it's a big local basic income. So it will come from, like a lot of the climate change stuff has, from local authorities. Why are we talking about UBI during a climate change stream, though? That will become apparent. But once again, here's their report. Here's them touting all the coverage it got. BBC News, Cornwall Live. It wasn't The Guardian and The Independent too.
We could maybe leave it at this for the moment. One of the big problems with all the climate stuff as far as the managerialists are concerned is that people are travelling on carbon-rich transport. And that they all can't work at home anyway because the fake jobs are all fake anyway and people start to realise it. So why don't you just keep them at home and pay them for a job that they aren't doing anyway?
The big thunk here was that I kept encountering this think tank autonomy. I'd never heard of them. They're basically nobodies if you look at them directly. Yeah. They seem to be just a small think tank, but they also seem to be able to get every single thing they publish the headlines. Why is this tiny think tank autonomy able to get their narratives directly into a huge swathe of the British media simultaneously? It makes it look like they are springing up in an emergent fashion.
A quick poke at their about section just to see what they've got on there.
I've already had a poke about that. I'll show it in a sec. But basically what they are is they are a renter policy. They do consultancy work. They do reports. They do briefings. They will basically say whatever you tell them to say. Mm. Much like the Economist's vertical we looked at during the demobilisation streams.
Yes, or say, for example, the Tory party needs a new report that says having 1.2 million immigrants a year would actually be beneficial, so they just go straight to, the Adam Smith Institute. Scroll down for a second there, what did I say? With special thanks to the organisations that funded our work up until this point, including SUBAC, the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation, the Communication Workers Union, and the Alex Ferry Foundation and the Gorilla Foundation.
The Gorilla Foundation is a big globalist one.
Yeah.
And the Alex Ferry Foundation is just, as I'll get to later, the unions funneling money into this. So the big unions that are, again, interlinked.
Communication Workers Union is a massive one.
Yes, it is.
And is essentially probably an extra element of Ofcom if you really delved into it.
Well, the big one here, their biggest supporter seems to be an outfit called SUBAC. That is what got the juices flowing here, because I encountered the report we'll be going through quite soon here. SUBAC described itself as a climate accelerator fund founded by Baroness Byron Worthington, now a lifelong peer in the House of Lords and the former government liaison to SSE Energy.
Yeah, Baroness Bryonary Worthington is universally credited as the main author of the UK Climate Change Act. Bryony also cut her teeth, now I believe is very young, working for things like Operation Rally and Rally International, which is touted as a youth expedition organisation. And as we have discussed before with other stuff like, you know, school exchanges and whatnot, that's probably a human trafficking front. But what it shows is that this woman has been, there's not much you can find out about her, and we'll go over this in a bit. But this woman has been working with some form of NGO or think tank since she's basically been a child.
Yes. Well, also it just shows that a Labour peer, a lifelong peer, someone who's been rewarded with a baronet, becoming a baroness, is founding this massive money funnel. This funneling money into a think tank that is then feeding money back to the very government that she is basically part of.
Mm.
And it's a great illustration, really, of how the sausage gets made and how the rhetoric of what is kind of becoming the climate war is manufactured. It's manufactured by seemingly boring people who have many layers of connection towards the very apex of the power structure and the people embedded within it. Says here that she was...
Worthington is supported by Amali D. Alwis, MBE, the forming managing director of Microsoft for Startups UK, and CEO of Code First Girls, Michelle Yu, co-founder of Songkick, and Dr. Jack Kelly, former Google DeepMind machine learning engineer.
We got all the technocrats.
Climate tech has been found to be the fastest growing vertical in Europe. Equity funding in the climate sector is vital, but cannot be the only option. We need a unified approach from the for-profit and not-for-profit worlds if we're going to have a real impact on the climate crisis.
Well, this is seen as them plugging the gaps in policy generation. This is explicitly them moving into policy generation.
Well, they're just casually talking about there's some group called Energy Impact Partners, which received backing from Microsoft for its £337 million energy fund. So, you know, in a couple of years' time, as we looked at the big tech stuff, we'll be able to look at the eco-bubble stuff, because this still seems to be ramping up for the most part.
It is, and it's ramping up effectively with government money and assistance.
Is this from 10th of March this year?
Last year, I believe.
Right.
So this is from 2022. Introducing our latest cohort of not-for-profit climate startups. It's funny that they talk about their accelerator fund and they're investing here, but one of their not-for-profit climate startups is Autonomy, which is a think tank which does a lot more than just talk about climate change. As you've seen, they talk about UBI, they talk about the four-day work week, they talk about a lot of the kind of hot-button total managerial policy that we're seeing. And it's very interesting that you can draw a straight line.
Look at the security state implications in some of these as well, though.
Yeah.
Energy tags, mission to accelerate the shift to renewable energy on a global scale through 24/7 energy tracking. The independent non-profit organization is creating an internationally recognized standard for hourly certificates that allow energy users to verify the source of the electricity each hour of the day.
So that's just straight up a service that will spy on you.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Project Canopy provides environmental intelligence to stop deforestation in the Congo Basin rainforest. Sabotage outfit, then.
It would seem so, yes. But the reason this is important is because of who Baroness Worthington is. But we'll get to that in a little second.
Is it worth going over the super chat that we've got there?
We have someone who became a member.
Yes, there's that as well. And if you scroll up, I believe Coney Current Year.
Yes. We shall go over that as well. But yes, thank you, Valdemode, for becoming a member at the Hat Tipper level. Thank you very much. And thank you, Coney Current Year, for the £5. The title implies wars fought against other countries done in the name of climate change. Assad must go. Serious CO emissions are too high. Well, there is that part of the narrative as well, which we'll get to. Mm. We will be talking about that stuff. But I want to go over very quickly, as quickly as we can, kind of what is considered by many as the boring and irrelevant stuff. Because it is not boring and it is not irrelevant. Because you can look at these supposedly tiny independent think tanks and what they say is given to them by the government itself, taken as an independent advisory role, quote unquote, and then put directly into policy. And we'll see how that has dramatic implications moving forward for what's being said here. Because a lot of it is, as we've shown last week, being put into practice. And it all really adds up into a...
Well, they say it right here, though, in this thing. Autonomy will be generating the data and policy solutions regarding the future of sustainable jobs
and
just green transitions for our economies and societies.
What this illustrates is that you must understand that these measures are provably interconnected. These are the interconnections. They come from the same people who are all firmly within the British establishment. This has never been an assault from without.
And then
Autonomy also receives money from the Welsh government, the Green Party, and indirectly via NGOs, all of the big trade unions.
I think you've got another source for that there.
The Future Fit for Wales is a shorter working week for all. They mention in here that they are... report was commissioned by the Future Generations Commissioner for Wales, so directly by the Welsh government.
And then they've already got in the bottom corner there the thing you're going to go on to next, which is their four-day working week pilot programme.
Yes, the four-day working week pilot programme that got huge amounts of national attention.
And I think this is the one we've already talked about.
Yes, we talked
before
about this previously, but this was also run by the think tank Autonomy. And it was also done in conjunction with parts of the London Assembly and large other bits of the British establishment. So we're seeing a supposedly small independent entity just acting as a policy funnel and being re-amplified.
This is also emerging, isn't it?
It's also emerging. I looked at their team and it's all just like lifelong academics and NGO workers. It seems that they're getting better at removing some of the bigger people from the boards of these places. Because the Baroness connection is due to basically their main funder, not directly within the organization itself. But again, this is effectively being run and funded by the same woman who wrote the supposedly wrote the Climate Change Act. So where all this is coming from really seems to be ultimately Byron Worthington, Baroness Worthington, which there does not seem to be a decent amount of profile on.
To the extent that if you try and search up things like family members, parents, you find Wikipedia, like internal stuff, saying, well, why isn't this information on here? Wouldn't it at least be somewhat interesting? And then weird Wikipedia people going, no, that's not needed. It's not necessary. It's like, well, you know, think of the fact that what other sort of apparatchiks in government, like the Ofcom guys or the people at, the Big Brother Watch stuff we looked at. We were able to find out quite a lot about those people, at least to some extent. The ones that we at least can confirm that were real. Whereas here, it's like, well, there's basically not much about this woman other than a couple of mentions of the things she's done, the little government departments she's worked for, the fact that, again, she went from being Friends of the Earth activist in the early 2000s to government, governmental relations officer for SSE Energy in the UK, which is now one of the biggest energy firms we have. At the forefront, of course, of this new green sort of push.
So this woman has been part of the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. She is credited with drafting the Climate Change Bill, which is one of the most impactful bills in British law of the last 100 years, and also became the head of government relations for SSE, and yet no one can tell you like who the father of her child is. And no one can tell you who her parents are. Because I like to look at that because a lot of these people are people who were born into the British establishment.
Well, it's like when people sort of talk about Toby Young, it's like, well, how many people understand that his dad and his grandfather were members of the Fabian Society and wrote the book on meritocracy and stuff like this? It's like, well, you know, without unironically like just being able to see that on the Wikipedia article, that's something I wouldn't have known. Whereas in this case, we aren't able to work out who old man and old lady Worthington are.
She apparently just appears at Queen's College, Cambridge, and then ends
up... the born and grew up in Wales one there? Is that some sort of biopic that might get us as close as we can? God, that's from Ancestry.
Yeah, they had to dig that out of the Ancestry records. Basically nothing before her being parachuted into NGOs and government seems to exist. I understand being a private person, but all of this seems to have been scrubbed from the internet to an extreme degree.
Yeah, especially for someone who's a sitting lord.
A sitting lifelong lord. It is very, very odd.
But of course, she's not, in a media sense, a complete nobody, because she was involved in nonsense like this back in 2011.
Yes, 2011, she became the first peer to breastfeed in the House of Lords as a public interest story. We know this about her, but we don't know her background. We don't know if her parents...
I don't know. There might be more personal details in this article, but I couldn't read it because my phone and my laptop just refused to deal with the Daily
there
Mail
is
website
not.
And ad blog.
There is not more details on this, on her background.
There we go, then.
Basically, she talks about David Miliband.
Oh, there we go. Married to neuroscientist Dr. Srivis Chenu.
She commutes to Parliament from her Cambridge home.
Well, if I'm right in saying, the second name, Chenu, appeared somewhere else when I was looking at something earlier, so...
Fair enough. But, no, it again, there seems to be very scant information about this person. It's very odd.
Also friends with Ed Miliband, so it tells you all you need
Ed
to
and know. David Miliband. The Milibands, my favorite insects, but it's the thing I found funniest though was the fact that the campaign she was part of before she was basically parachuted into government to draft the Climate Change Act, she was brought straight from working for Friends of the Earth, which is the pressure group that credits themselves for forcing the government to write the Climate Change Act. She went straight from manufacturing the consent to writing the document, which is hilarious.
Yeah, a campaign call for a new climate change law, law that would tackle the main cause of climate change, CO2.
Well, the big ass campaign proved people power can change the the thing is, no one remembers this. Do you remember the mass climate protests of 2008? No, people were worried about their houses being foreclosed on. Mm. There really was no mass climate movement back then. Look how small the crowds are they're photographing.
Look how white they are.
As well, yes. Was the whole thing here. They got a couple of celebrities
that
involved.
That fucking image.
They got the good old Thom Yorke involved.
Nonce.
Definitely. But, 2,000 people, 200,000 people contacted their MP to ask them to support the climate change bill. Ooh. But this is the campaign that is crediting its Together We Won. It's crediting itself with the creation.
Scroll back up again as well.
Yeah.
What was that there? There was one up in 2008. Yeah, not only that, but in 2008, the big ask launched in 17 countries across Europe, calling on governments to cut CO2 emissions. After 3.5 years campaigning in October 2008, the British Parliament voted for the world-beating Climate Change Act we now have in place.
Well, if you read any kind of biography of Baroness Worthington, it will tell you that she was the main figure behind the drafting of the Climate Change Act. That is one of the only consistent pieces of information I can see about her, apart from a lot of fluff and also conspicuously missing fluff.
Yes.
But all of this is a great illustration of how the sausage gets made. This is her, like I said, running both sides. She goes directly from Friends of the Earth into government, and both Friends of the Earth...
Oh no, she goes from Friends of the Earth to massive energy suppliers, into government, back out into NGOs at the same time, and now into a new NGO now.
Yes, basically, she dances between the worlds.
People changed politics.
Yes.
Friends of the Earth, big-ass campaign, saw unprecedented numbers of people calling for a strong climate law. Celebrities, companies, charities, and individuals got behind the campaign. Nearly 200,000 people spoke to their MP directly.
Well, this is how consent is manufactured.
And of course.
This is, again, it looks eye-rolling, but this is how they do it.
People often ask, does anything change politics? Well, it has here.
Like I said, Friends of the Earth, now Autonomy, the think tank, both function as extensions of the UK government, providing independent academic and grassroots support for measures the UK government was already planning to bring in. Worthington was rewarded for this process by being made a baroness and a lifelong peer for doing so.
And we can go to a Wikipedia article about... Guardian article from 2008 when she first moved into the sandbag position.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a weird sort of euphemism, but I'll not say that sentence again. The interesting thing here, though, is the fact that it seems ever so slightly, if you read this article in full, that they are discussing her in an almost slightly critical manner.
Yes.
And they're not quite sure about, you know, who's this strange woman? She's a, you know, peer in the Labour Party, from this job to the next, now working for some NGO, and she's talking about doing this, that, and the next thing with carbon permits, which we'll get into in a moment. You know, how do we know we can trust her? But now, she, as far as I can tell, she seems to be one of the head people that manages all the environmental vertical stuff on the Guardian's website.
Yes, it's kind of a weird one. This article's so tentative. But it begins to explain, one, some of her vision, and two, how it filters down into all these different think tanks that are proposing all this policy on UBI, demobilisation, de-work, effectively, and all climate offsetting and climate...
I was going to say, we'll go through the three paragraphs I've picked out there, because they're... One, explain what exactly they were up to, and two, just some of the stuff she says alongside that is just very telling. I don't know, I'm clearing my throat, I shouldn't. It's just that one there.
Yes.
Next week, Worthington launches sandbag.org.uk, a not-for-profit website that allows members to buy up surplus permits to pollute that form the currency of the European Union's Emission Trading Scheme, or EU ETS. Members can then retire them so that they cannot continue to be traded between the industrial polluters, cement, steel and car manufacturers, etc. forced by EU regulation to operate within the system. I suppose it's a bit like burning money in front of someone so they can't spend it on something bad, she explained. And just to put it across further what's going on here, early 2000s, the EU launches a carbon permit scheme. In a sense, companies have to pay, you know, X euros to emit a ton of carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And of course, and I remember discussing this with an economics lecturer when I had an environmental economics module. I said, well, how do you know how many to produce? He said, well, I don't know. No one knows how many to produce. The idea is that the cost will balance out. But of course, this doesn't work because they put out way, way, way too much, at least in theory.
Yeah, yeah.
And the price halted. It never stopped going up.
Yeah.
And they mentioned that sort of in a little bit here. It halted at like 20-odd euros or something. So all of a sudden, I'm presuming this genius idea came from her own mind and nowhere else. Well, why not create a price floor in the permit market by buying up all the surplus stuff and, as they say, retire it
yeah.
so that someone cannot emit carbon in turn and essentially create like an artificial limit of here's how much carbon could be produced every year because we're buying up X percentage of the
Basically,
permits.
The woman who wrote the UK climate change legislation created an NGO called Sandbag that was supposed to be Ooh, we can buy up all the CO2 permits and stop the industry polluting. But really, it's now called Ember. But really what it was somebody coming in from the outside and saying, look, we need someone to...
We need an extra pressure to make this emissions trading scheme work.
Yes.
Because if the EU does it themselves, they'll just get done for throttling business.
Yeah.
So if they bring in some NGOs to do it for them, it's like, well... Now it's someone else who's engaging in activist investing that's making our scheme more stringent. But there's more to this anyway. If we go down further near the bottom, the government can't expect an incumbent industry to innovate towards carbon capture systems. Why would they change direction if they are making lots of money now? They need both a carrot and stick. The emissions trading system, despite its problem, gives companies both. You need a market. And there we are, there's a public-private partnership all the way back in 2008. We have this EU scheme, it's the government, we need an extra attaché NGO programme on top in the form of Sandbag to make sure that the scheme works to its fullest extent. And then she goes on to say at the bottom, an NGO can't expect to win against this without some kind of major civil movement behind them. Major civil movement, that you would expect that to be a populist movement, mass, lots of people. We have to target the educated, informed, and affluent to do something. It's our responsibility, the ones who have all the privileges. That's what I'm trying to do with Sandbag. I have some form of collection point for like an investor vanguard sort of activist group for climate policy.
Again, it's very, very clear that this was just a subsidy towards the carbon trading market to stop, basically to try and stop some of the arse falling out of it in the early days. And it's being phrased, like much of it does, as activism. That they are wrapping up effectively what quote-unquote bad green capitalism in an activist wrapper, but also just coming out saying, look, we need to have at least the illusion of a market. We need to be able to make people rich by complying with us.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's not going to work and we'll have to keep going further, which they always do keep going further, but it's a necessary transitional step. The main meat, really, of what the autonomy people have come out with in terms of climate is the fusion, is the synthesis of UBI and carbon tax. It's the report we hinted at last week when we looked at some of the stuff here, which is the carbon dioxide based dividends from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. This is the quote once again that invokes communism, just directly invokes the communism. But there's a soft puff piece here from the Independent. From March 2022.
Do they say UBI anywhere on here directly in the article? You're searching in the
I know. I always do that. They do not say it in the article, but I do believe they say it in the report.
Let's see the bottom of the article, at least see if there's any decent conclusion at
all. Well, they basically just say carbon tax could eradicate extreme poverty, economists say. And they're not economists.
So what are they actually talking about? Wealth redistribution in the name of the environment?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Proceeds from tax will be paid out as dividends. Incomes of most people... I think that's a typo there.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, a properly tuned carbon tax could eradicate extreme poverty worldwide, lifting more than 1 billion people above the global poverty line. Economists at the think tank Autonomy say the charge on emissions could be used to pay a dividend to people around the world by taxing polluting activities while helping stop climate change. And the previous Guardian article we're looking at, Miss Baroness Byrony, whatever her face is, in her own words suggested that she did not like the typical carbon mitigation stuff because she thought it smelled of imperialism.
This is through many layers of removal because they have to do it. This is a report effectively commissioned by the Labour Party.
Well, yes, but this is also, again, the exact same idea we saw all the way back in a National Geographic thing we looked at about 8 or 9 months ago with this sort of climate reparations and repaying, or what was it, that Europe and America had to repay India and Pakistan for the floods that we're having, because this was an extreme event that they could prove as a consequence using science of Western industrialism, and that we had to ignore some of the inconsistencies in the data because of historical indifferences, well, whatever it was.
This is where the warfare aspect comes in. Under the grand proposals, 3.8 billion people worldwide would see their income increase by at least 10%. Bringing around 1 billion people over the conventional poverty lines. I mean, we're not going to talk about inflation. It's not worth engaging with in this.
Yeah.
It's such a pie-in-the-sky proposal, but anyway. People will be charged more for activities like burning fossil fuels or buying polluting products, but would also be given a regular income in the form of a dividend from the tax. So basically, it's carbon credits-based UBI. In that you get money from other people polluting what is your air. They don't mention that in here. Again, this is kind of a puff piece. UK's missing climate change, said investment in green energy is the best way to bring down bills, blah, blah, blah.
Was that, scroll up, was it Philip Free? He was mentioned somewhere else, wasn't he? As co-author of the paper. A carbon tax and dividend scheme would constitute a massive economic incentive toward greening the economy. Driving out the consumption of carbon-intensive goods while maintaining livelihoods. This report makes a compelling case for governments to look at taxing the rich to help save the planet from climate change. We do not have long left to tackle climate change, so leaders across the world need to urgently look at proposals whilst we transition away from a carbon-centred society. But we are carbon, you know.
Well, the report itself is called Toll Gates and Money Pumps. Why carbon taxation could be a simple, fair, and transformative. I'm trying to have a look at it. Here we go, yes. The study looks at the possible impacts of a carbon tax and dividend scheme upon incomes across society. In its simple formulation, such as a scheme taxes individuals according to their carbon consumption and pays out revenue to all individuals within a defined geography. It is comparable to a form of universal basic income funded by carbon taxes. The study models such a scheme at three different scales, global, European, and national scale. But the Cliff Notes stuff here is just... It's amazing they can say this stuff with a straight face, but this is also just long-term what a lot of people in power would like to at least appear to be happening.
Mm.
A global carbon tax dividend would disproportionately benefit countries in Latin America, South Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, and many other countries in the global south.
I mean, this is, what would you call it, anti-imperialist revisionism, and we're basically paying for being conquerors, and we're calling it climate change. And also that's... I think that the UBI aspect here that is missed in some places where they don't quite fully go into it is that this is part of a complex. UBI cannot be done without digital ID. And as far as the managerial sort of mindset is concerned, putting 50% of the population onto UBI instead of having them in fake work that requires pollution for them to get there that math works in their head. So there's no reason not to have this, especially when it means they've got justification on top for having ID and carbon trackers and energy trackers and this, that, and the next thing, which are funded by the very same groups funding the UBI scheme stuff to go alongside it.
Well, it's just them kind of going to this pie-in-the-sky scheme of, like, effectively global carbon communism. They talk about Brazil, the context and background. This is where the hilarious quote about the from each according to his use to each according to his equal ownership comes from. But the stuff that is not discussed in here, because the research itself is just bunk. They're just making up numbers. It is a complete farce of a document in its entirety. Apart from its mission statement, which is global wealth distribution through a global system, it really doesn't say much else. It is an aspirational document, let's say.
Of course, but we know the principles this is aiming towards, and we know them like the back of our hand. That's why we are talking about this as part of a complex encompassing all sorts of other things, be it both domestic security and surveillance technology and international policy and how we interact with Russia, China, and whoever else.
To enact this policy, it would require a one-world government that would require a third world war. That's the part that is never said in these documents. To have this happen proper would need to be facilitated by a omnipotent global government. That's why China and Russia are not mentioned in this report anywhere. There is not a single mention of China.
They say about Asia, but there's no... Yes. I mean, do they even get into anywhere within this 60-page document about how they plan to have, you know, a governance outline for this policy?
No. No, they don't. Like you said, we know by now that UBI is part of the digital ID complex within the managerial state. So what they will do is put... Basically, to be put on UBI, you must be, quote-unquote, documented. You must have some sort of global social security number, and you must access it through a likely digital global kind of welfare state. And all of that stuff is just not mentioned, but it's necessitated.
You've got the point here. China and Russia are not mentioned at all. Is that would necessitate discussions around the use of force? The forced redistribution of wealth is seen as a bonus side effect to saving the world, and the methods by which it would be enforced globally are hand-waved away. What is being proposed is mass carbon serfdom without the land ownership contracts, sort of what you suggest here is like a climate cold war, which is the discussion we kind of had about it yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I think it's almost sort of passé now to suggest the idea that, oh, we'll go to war with China over CO2 emissions. But as you rightly pointed out, some people still haven't worked that one out.
No, that is what is being teased at people. The idea of world war climate is something that, as we'll get into, has been baked into a lot of the signalling. Not the messaging, but the signalling that comes out of large parts of the media complex.
Let me throw another curveball into the mix here. They will say that this is an issue, much like the climate itself, that goes beyond borders. It does not matter whether you're Indian, a Chinaman, or British, in this instance at least. We are all equal in terms of the environment, and therefore we all have a duty to make sure that the one external and also internal enemy, the polluter, is dealt with in all nations. And it will be given as an opportunity to every national government, you know, side with us in using this technology to consolidate your position domestically.
Yes. That really is the crux of it.
And again, anyone wants to understand the entirety of that, just go read my Witan speech from last year.
I'll put the quote back up there, but really this is... Again, it's something we take for granted, but you can just see large sections of the British political establishment salivating over the idea of holding the reins of a single global government.
And this is the same reason why, in at least the vast majority of eco reports I have seen, there is no mention of what will be done with military technology or transport.
No. There is never a mention.
We're going to get rid of all the shipping and all the aeroplanes.
Well, the elephant in the room is that throughout all the reporting, China is implicitly the enemy of the Green Frontier. It is taken as a given. It is not even discussed that they are the problem. And there's always some smart-ass neocon going, well, China's doing all the pollution. Why should we get rid of our industry when there's China? And a lot of people have taken that as a signal that, oh, we're going to have war with China. But the interlinking there between the economies is too big. China has become effectively the clearinghouse for Western off-the-books carbon.
And also partly the sort of idea that, you know, the other elephant in the room is that the vast majority of quote-unquote developed nations are not in a fit state to be engaging in a war.
No, we are already effectively in what would be considered a climate cold war with Russia and China.
Yes.
There's already a large amount of rhetoric
that
justifies the enmity in climate terms. This kind of geopolitical facet of the war for the climate already exists, but I do not believe they will use it as kind of a lot of people are talking about, oh, they need the white boys for World War III. There isn't.
Yeah, I have to admit, as much as I am very much on the woke as going back in the bottle bandwagon, I'm not so much on it being for the white boys needing to die in the war bandwagon. That's a separate trailer.
As the frankly farcical conflict in Ukraine has proved, no country, or even collection of countries in the world, is in a fit state to conduct any kind of large-scale war.
No, I mean, we've not really had anything approximating a serious large-scale war since, really, Korea and Vietnam.
Yeah.
Even the stuff in, you know, Kosovo and all the Balkans and this, that, and the next thing, there was conflict, but not, you know, like World War One, World War Two, millions of men moving across Europe all at once.
Yeah.
That will never be seen again.
No, it will never be seen again. Like I said, China is firmly being placed as the enemy, and global hegemony of the US is the friend.
You've got one from the Atlantic here?
I have. There is a compromise position really waiting in the wings. There's quite a few articles like this that are a bit waffly, but this is one of the best indications that, one, the climate war has already been factored into the narrative, as it were. This is from November 2022. It's called "The World Could Be Entering a New Era of Climate War, But You Know Not in the Way That We Think," because it prefaced itself by saying that, oh, well, we all know that climate change is going to lead to civil wars as all the lakes dry up in Africa and all the children die.
Yes.
It's going to be like the Michael Jackson video where he goes, what about us? But what about children? oh, dear, has it paywalled me here? Ah, I've been hoisted by my own petard. Oh, no, look at that. Oh, no.
What if we could just get round your paywall?
Yeah, what if we could just get round your... No, I should have just archived that anyway. But the operative paragraph,
God, look at the... Not before you will go to that one quickly. "The success of the past 7 years was driven home for me when I saw a German public service announcement last month that added decarbonisation to the old Enlightenment Trinity. Democracy, diversity, and climate protection.
You are Europe. What a victory.
And what a complicated one.
But there has already been like full spectrum Anglosphere, global hegemony sphere dominance of the climate agenda. There is no real quote-unquote conflict. In fact, even China itself is trying to portray itself as the leader of the green movement in its own propaganda.
They're the first people to institute a credit score with climate implements.
Yes,
That's the whole thing as well that people seem not to grasp sometimes, is that so much of this stuff exists to make us follow in their path.
Yes. Much of it is. But there's a great like set of lines here, which is really funny to me.
Can we read this out?
You can read this out, yeah.
"Conflict over dual-use technologies is already at the centre of US-Chinese trade spats. Last month, the Biden administration effectively banned the sale of any modern semiconductor manufacturing equipment to China. also forbade US persons, a group that compromises American citizens and green card holders, from working in the Chinese semiconductor industry. As Eric Levitz writes in the New York Magazine, the policy amounts to a type of economic war because it is now official US policy to prevent China from achieving its development goals. This is a dangerous logic when you consider that semiconductors are crucial for decarbonisation. The shift to electricity all but necessitates greater use of semiconductors.
So what the Atlantic here is saying is that we can't have a war with China. They wouldn't be able to meet their Kyoto Agreement targets.
Yeah, you've got here, we have to give China what is effectively military equipment or else they can't fight climate change. Well, of course, they need weapons if they're going to fight climate change.
The entire point of opening relations with China and exporting so much manufacturing to them is that would make them too interlinked with us for there to be a war, which is technically true. But it also means that you end up with the situation where there's like 700 tails and no dog. In that there's all of these different interests and nobody seems to understand where the power base really is, which again is intentional. Yeah,
thank you, Albion in Exile. I'm burning plastic in a big oil drum in my back garden. I'm doing my bit.
Thank you. Where I'm doing
You're
my
You're helping
part.
The trees. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm doing my part. But we're kind of skipping over the traditional narrative here of the war against China, because there's an article
Frankly,
here.
It's fake and also gay.
Yes.
From the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yes, there's an article here from the Council on Foreign Relations, who we talked about before, talking about China's fate against climate change and environmental degradation. China's carbon emissions threaten global efforts to fight climate change. Its broader involvement its broader environmental deregulation endangers economic growth, public health, and government legitimacy. Are Beijing's policies enough? Basically, this whole thing is a bit of a finger wagging about the idea that China's the big emitter. They have to lower their emissions or else we're not going to meet our targets. But they talk about the fact that they do have at least token efforts to address quote unquote climate change. But this isn't portraying China, this is from 2021, as like the eco great Satan. This is them being portrayed effectively as like a heel.
Mm.
This is the language of kayfabe. China is meant to be the bad boy in this situation.
Well, yeah, and as
you're but he's not meant to be the actual villain.
Well, that's the thing, as you're pointing out here, that the point isn't the direct enmity between one nation and another. It is a sort of multipolar thing. You're seeing here, the real war for climate will be the war of all against all, because they've already shown that it's a zero-sum game. There's only so much, you know, oxygen in the atmosphere. There's only so much carbon we can put up there. We have to squabble and cut and divide what there is amongst us and give it to those of us who needs most.
As we've seen, there really haven't been, even as we're reaching kind of the 2030, 2050, we're supposed to have completely decarbonized in 20 years. If there was going to be this great international climate conflict, we'd already see like a large amount of climate sanctions.
Yes.
Which aren't even on the table. You know, they're talked about sometimes, that nudge unit thing.
We have talked about climate sanctions. Climate sanctions aren't aimed at Russia. They aren't aimed at China. They aren't aimed at strategic enemies. They're aimed at third world nations that seem to be developing an economy not relying on Western industry in some way, shape, or form.
Yes, like what happened to Sri Lanka. But it really... The proposals put forward by the climate baroness who wrote the Climate Change Act is really that there will be 7 billion parcels of air divided between the world's population equally, and they will own those parcels in the same way that you own the roads. You can't really take your air parcel with you. This will be administered by a class of managers to ensure equitable treatment of all 7 billion parcels of air, lest the world literally end. That is the real crux of kind of the war for the climate. It's not going to be a war between great powers. It is a war from the power structure on you.
Well, you've got here, we will be told we are in a climate conflict with Russia and China whilst using their energy and consuming their goods. I don't think we'll be told we're in a conflict with them. We're in a conflict against something with them. China is the factory's own, designated by the current order, and they will simply shift production around where needed and pretend the end of climate change whilst bringing China into the fold. The climate is not only geopolitical, it is personal. You will be responsible for it in your everyday life and decisions. There will be an app, there will be carbon credits, first local, then global, and there will be management propped up by the idea it is your fellow man who's keeping you in a state of subsistence rather than those in power, the same trick as democracy. After all, no one likes the outcomes of democracy, but they are presented as terrible things being done fairly. And I also want to add another further point onto this. We all know that these systems we implemented poorly. We have discussed this in the Crime in a Cashless Society stream.
Yeah, they're not competent enough to actually create like a global UBI system.
God, is that the image of LA being nuked in Terminator 2 or 3 or whatever?
No.
Is it not? I thought it was.
I basically typed into, again, I'm afraid that's another, you've been looking at AI images the whole time.
No!
It's a little bit of a kajiggering on my part.
It does kind of look like that, though.
It does look like that, yes. I basically put on, like, Endless Slum City at sunset, and that's what it came out with. Not too bad, but my kind of final word on this was that the banality of what he's done is most shocking. It's an anti-human war waged with technology without a shot being fired, and it's being done through incredibly boring postgraduates writing wishy-washy policy documents that are then taken as justification by those who actually wield power, and it just ends with you like actually being in the pod eating the bugs.
Yep, having your carbon credits stolen off you by some Ugandan man.
Yeah, but I want to impress on people that a lot of people think that there will be this grand geopolitical conflagration. And it looks like increasingly
it's going to be a very slow burn.
Yeah, there will just not be.
No.
Until basically the arse falls out the entire thing. There is too much at stake for all of those who hold power in all corners of the world, including China and Russia, for them to completely abandon this system of climate mitigation. They are wedded to it because it is such a perfect method of control for internal populations. It is governments that will be waging a war against their own people. And as you've seen in all these documents, creating a climate UBI and public ownership, effectively, nationalizing the planet will make us all tangentially responsible for it. And failure will be put their shoulders, but on our shoulders.
I can't wait to see the debates where it's going to be like, nationalise the atmosphere. No, privatise the atmosphere.
No.
And we're going to have the circular green economy versus the absolute zero economy. And it's all so tiresome.
But yes, that's a long-winded way of saying all of this is being manufactured by the government pretending to consult itself.
Learn how to start fires and be able to skin animals.
You will increasingly see a lot of these think tanks come out of nowhere, and a lot of the news you see is completely inorganic. These are not grassroots movements, as we keep trying to prove to you. These are simply further arms of the state through several layers of separation. Once again, thank you guys for showing up. Thank you to everyone who donates. I think we've got other donations out there. Thank you to our new members. Thank you for everyone who supports us on the Substack. I will link that once again because there will be something coming out tomorrow. This was more of just a quick follow-up to give you an idea of, one, how the sausage gets made, and two, kind of the darker implications and again, it's the boring stuff, I think, that gets missed. That's what we try and cover on these streams, and sometimes to our detriment, really, in that people will be why we're getting lost in the weeds of NGOs, but it's very important.
It is to our detriment until 6 months later, everything comes out, and people are like, oh, wow, how did you guys like see through time? And it's like, well, you know.
But you have these technocrats who appear from nowhere and disappear into nowhere again, and it all becomes very baffling and confusing for people, but hopefully, with a lot of the theory stuff we've done and a lot of the setup that we've done, people are more able to filter reality. People ask us why we don't do like staggered like white pill streams, which I'll be doing one of those at some point, kind of a a hopeful stream.
I think everything we do is a white pill stream because we're showing you the direction things are actually going in and where you can genuinely focus your time, effort, and money in a way that's not going to completely backfire on you.
Yes. But it's necessary knowledge to understand that whenever you see a think tank you've never heard of be quoted by a media organization saying that you need UBI or they need to, you know, everyone needs to be given UBI, that is not genuine.
No.
And let me just make sure that the
stream's not died.
Yeah, because we're getting the spinning circle of death there. But it looks like it hasn't. It looks like it's just the YouTube.
I believe we have one last final chat there from Melon for $2. Bring on the black pills. You can pay, but we will not allow you to overdose because we are responsible dealers.
We are responsible dealers of the black pills.
Anyway, that'll be all from us, I believe. So, good night.
Thank you guys for watching and have yourselves a very, very good night.